are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. My Mopedman in studio for you. It's time now to bring in our producer, Matt Fontana. By the way, we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. You can tweet us. We'll go into the mailbag this hour. Use the hashtag AskCBD. We've already seen some of those questions, but you can tweet at Nathan Zagura, at Browns underscore daily. Use the hashtag AskCBD. But now let's bring in our producer, and we'll hear from Joe Thomas as well, who, by the way, his Mission Barbecue that was down there, my goodness, we might have to have Mopedman weigh in on that one. And his, if we get a,
we have to find a scale large enough for him to actually weigh in. We'll have to go to, like, Mark's. They have that, like, 400-pound scale.
Like a steer scale. Mopedman, was that – how good was that barbecue? That is the sound of a happy
tipping
man.
Tipping the needle, baby.
That's right. That's right. That's the sound of a happy man. Mutt Fontana.
I was forced to dump that entire – no, I'm just kidding.
Number one.
Ron Lake.
Why?
Well, I'll tell you later.
He said he was forced to dump it.
No, I'm kidding. I didn't dump it. Give me one word to describe Arian Foster's career.
I would say it's a very, very solid career, and Arian Foster can leave the game with no regrets and be looked at by his peers and for us as and by us as analysts as in an era of football, I'd say the, you know, late 2000s to the early 2010s as a Pro Bowl solid runner.
I'm going to call him I'm looking for the right word here.
Ray Jennings.
What?
Ray Jennings. That was his character in
Right now, I was going to say, I'm going to say historic. Because from a fantasy football standpoint, what he did from 2010 to 2012, a three-year stretch, was historic. And, you know, you look at his 2009 season, he had 257 yards, three touchdowns. Then he explodes. Listen to 2010. He rushes for 1,614 yards and 16 touchdowns, catches 66 passes for 604 yards and two touchdowns. So just quickly, 2,218 total yards and 18 touchdowns in 2010. In 2011, in only 13 games, mind you, Matt Wilhelm, only 13 games in 2011, Arian Foster produces 1,841 total yards and 12 touchdowns. And then in 2012, he produces 1,628 total yards and 17 touchdowns.
Was he the leading rusher in those 3 years?
Definitely in 2010 he was. And then he got hurt the following season and then came back in 2014 for one last big year where he put together 1,600 total yards and 13 touchdowns in 13 games. I mean, that's four
and here,
great
here's
seasons,
a,
not long enough,
here's
but
he
was a stud.
Here's an understanding for those who maybe aren't familiar with Arian Foster, didn't watch him. That is, he was the perfect runner for Gary Kubiak in that zone
yep,
runs game.
He was.
He was the Terrell Davis of Mike Shanahan's era.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Gary, because Gary Kubiak was a subsidiary of Mike Shanahan, Terrell Davis, of course, with John Elway. Arian Foster was the perfect runner for that zone scene, that zone scheme.
What I like about him, this is a guy in 80 career games, averaged over 100 total yards per game for his career. In 80 career games, he put up basically 8,000 total yards, averaged 100 total yards a game for his career, and 68 touchdowns in 80 games. I mean, he did it all really in those four seasons, but those four seasons where you put those up there with kind of the way that Priest Holmes' star burned so bright. You remember
yes.
Priest Holmes?
Yeah, hello. San Diego Chargers played against him pretty much when his star was shining.
So let's look at Priest Holmes' years. This is interesting.
What it was, I want to say it's 2, 3, 4.
All right, so Priest Holmes had 3 years of dominance.
What was it? What were the years?
2001, 2002,
okay,
2003.
Okay, 1, 2, 3. I thought
it was yeah, well, 2004. We'll call it 4 years because 2001, he had basically 2,200 total yards and 2,169 total yards, 10 touchdowns. 2002, 2,287 total yards and a ridiculous 24 touchdowns. 2003, 2,110 total yards and 27 total touchdowns. And then 2004, in eight games, 1,079 total yards and 15 touchdowns from 2002 to 2004. Priest Holmes played a grand total of 38 games, and he scored, are you ready for this? In 38 games, he scored 66 touchdowns.
That was before, was there fantasy around then?
Yeah, he was the guy. My first ever hit on the radio or on TV was about Priest Holmes prior to the 2003 season.
Yeah. Well, I saw it. 2003, San Diego Charger. 2004, San Diego Charger. So I saw Priest Holmes and what he can do firsthand.
So is he the best that you ever saw in those moments? Because and I know LaDainian was good.
Hold on. Adrian Peterson broke the rushing record against us.
I know, but those,
as a rookie.
Think about the touchdown numbers right there.
Right. I would say the Kansas City Chiefs with Tony Gonzalez in his prime and Priest Holmes at running back. With what was the something Dunn? What was the other tight end's name?
Jason Dunn.
Jason Dunn, the big physical blocking tight end. Will Shields was along that offensive line.
Yep.
Hall of Famer.
Was Willie Rofe there? At that point?
Might have been. I'd have to look back. But I mean, that was one of the best football teams that we had to play against, and it just made Kansas City that much tougher to play.
And let me say this, okay? Let me say this. LaDainian Tomlinson had 3 years in his career with more than 2,000 yards from scrimmage. He had 1 year in his career with more than 20 touchdowns when he had
MVP,
31
2006.
In 2006. That year, 2,323 yards, 31 touchdowns. My God. But LaDainian Tomlinson, listen to these numbers. We'll start in 2002. 2,172 yards from scrimmage, 15 touchdowns. Next year, 2,370 yards, 17 touchdowns from scrimmage. The next year, 1,776 total yards, 18 touchdowns. 1,832 total yards, 20 touchdowns. 2,323 total yards, 31 touchdowns. 1,949 total yards, 18 touchdowns. 1,536 total yards, 12 touchdowns. Then he only had 884 total yards 1 year when he was banged up 12
touchdowns.
What year
touchdowns. Was
that? That was 2009.
How about this? So everything but that last year, I was a Charger to watch in front of me, which was insane.
So who would you say was better, peak LaDainian or peak Priest Holmes?
Probably peak Priest Holmes.
I'm not surprised by that. So LaDainian's best year in here, he averaged in his best season in there, he averaged 5.2 yards per carry and 9 yards per catch. I don't know what the answer is going to be for Priest Holmes. Priest Holmes' peak season, 5.2 yards per carry, 9.9 yards per catch. So a little bit better out of the backfield.
In 2003, my rookie year on that bad Chargers team, went 4-12. LaDainian Tomlinson had 100. How many catches did he have? I know he was over 100.
Which year?
2002. I'm sorry, 2003.
2003,
with Drew Brees at
quarterback. He had 100 catches for 725 yards.
100 catches at running back.
And he also ran, by the way, for 1,645 yards, averaging 5.3 a carry.
Right.
But he only scored 17 touchdowns.
Right. And we were 4-12.
My God. I mean, those guys were both dominant.
Yes.
Sean Alexander had that year where he scored a lot of touchdowns, but he couldn't do both.
No. And, yeah, he wasn't – I would say he was more –
he was a runner.
He was more like Arian Foster as a runner in that zone scheme than LaDainian. LaDainian Priest Holmes – will run by you, run over you, and will shake your socks off and have your jock laying on the ground as well.
So he did have 1 year where he caught 59 passes, never had 500 yards receiving in the season, talking about Sean Alexander now. But he did have that stretch where the 1 year in 2005, 1,880 yards rushing, 27 touchdowns on the ground.
Yep. Hasselbeck at quarterback, correct?
Those guys are gone. Has the game just changed? You don't have that anymore.
No.
I mean, Le'Veon Bell is probably the closest thing to it, although and Zeke and David Johnson. You have three guys right now that are good, but I mean.
Well, AP was that guy. AP's been over 1,500 yards how many times in his career?
But when was the last, when's the last time a guy had like 20 rushing touchdowns?
Chris Johnson, 2010.
It still seems like it was a while ago.
Well, it is a while ago.
My word. I'm trying to find it. How many 1,500 yard seasons did Adrian Peterson have in his career?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what.
We'll say 14.
1,400?
Yeah.
Three.
Wow. That's I would have thought it'd be more.
2008, he had 1,760 yards. 2012, 2,097 yards. And in 2015, 1,485 yards. He only has had more than 12 rushing touchdowns once in a season.
How about this? I'll throw this out there. Since we're on running backs and you mentioned Ezekiel Elliott, I'm going to create an over-under of 1,500 yards for Ezekiel Elliott. Over-under.
Oh, if he's healthy, over. Not even a question.
Well,
not even a question. They're talking about him running down Eric Dickerson's rookie rushing record. That's what
21 what? 2102, something like that?
I'm waiting for the Dallas News to pop that up for me. But that's what they're talking. 1808. Through six games, he's 84 yards behind Eric Dickerson's rushing total during his rookie season, but is projected to finish 67 yards ahead. So he's on pace right now for 1,875 yards rushing. So if he's healthy, I believe over 1,500.
Is he looking forward 2 weeks or next week?
No, that's going to be a tough one. Tough sledding that day, Ezekiel, when you come here to Cleveland and take
pouring.
On the Browns.
I hope it's pouring and slushy.
I hope Mo Pedman is out there.
Yeah.
All right, Fontana. That was obviously a good question, Fontana.
Say that might have been the longest response ever for Around the League. We're on to number two. How would you guys fix Thursday Night Football?
How would I fix Thursday Night Football? Get rid of it. It's a horrible product, and I think it is killing the National Football League.
I concur. There's not much you can do. There's not much you can do unless you had the ability to flex Thursday night.
But you can't. I don't think you can because you don't need the way that it's worked. That you
no, I understand.
Long,
I understand that you can't, but that's the best that I could come up with.
I say you just get rid of it altogether. I think it's overexposure.
The players hate it.
Players
the
hate
coaches
it.
Coaches don't like it.
Nobody likes it. And I think it's part of it's hurting the overall product.
I like the
and
color rush,
the
though.
NFL. But so turn color rush into Monday night and let every team get one Monday night game a year. And Sunday night is now your awesome game every week.
People need their Patriots and Cowboys.
Mo Pedman doesn't like it.
And Giants, oh my.
That's for Sunday night.
I'm just saying.
You don't believe that the Super Bowl, I'll say that the six of the 12 teams that make the playoffs that have the most franchise players that have the top jersey sales that deserve to be in primetime more than the Titans, the Jaguars,
but you
the
can
Colts.
Still do that by manipulating the schedule. It's just you give each
right.
team one appearance.
There. I understand.
I don't know. Thursday Night Football's got to go, though. Or maybe nobody. Maybe you, everybody has to earn being in primetime. There is no such thing as a primetime, and you do a color rush as a normal 1 o'clock game or a 4 o'clock. You get an afternoon. Everybody gets an afternoon CBS or Fox game, and you give them the color rush. Mo Pedman likes that better. All right, next.
Number three.
What's the weaker division, the AFC North or the AFC South?
The AFC South, at least the North has Pittsburgh that you think has an opportunity to win a Super Bowl. The South has nobody.
Right. I agree. Brock Osweiler stinks. Andrew Luck's great. Everything else around him stinks. The Jaguars stink. Tennessee is fluky. Dick LeBeau is my favorite thing about the Titans.
There you go.
Number four.
All right, final one, guys. Give us one quarterback that has overachieved through seven games and one quarterback that has underachieved.
I'll go first. I'm going to go overachieved, Cody Kessler. Every single person that's a part of the Dog Pound or every analyst locally thought Cody Kessler was an absolute miss in the third round, okay? And he is, and you've obviously shown what he can do from an efficiency analytics. He's put us in a situation to win football games. All you can ask for, Cody Kessler has done with limited opportunities. The biggest disappointment, I would say, is going to be Blake Bortles. Blake Bortles is a guy.
He stinks.
Blake Bortles is a guy, even more so than Osweiler. Blake Bortles is a guy that's in. There's a few. Osweiler, Blake Bortles, Ryan Tannehill, all stink, all franchise quarterbacks. But Blake Bortles is a guy that you took third overall, that you put so many weapons around. They've. Chris Ivory, T.J. Yeldon, Julius Thomas, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns. It's like, what more can you ask for? And then even furthermore, defensively, the defense that they've given a Blake Bortles-led team with the assets in via free agency and via the draft that they've given him, and for the Jaguars to still be a joke, to me, is why Blake Bortles is the worst.
So overachieve, I'll agree, Cody Kessler.
I don't need a stat. I don't need analytics.
Dak Prescott.
Overachiever.
Has been an overachiever
for sure.
This year. Matt Ryan has been an overachiever this year, reaching an elite level. Three quarterbacks, though, who are underachieving. I'll give you Bortles.
I give you three.
I give you Osweiler as well, okay. Those two. Bortles was never good, though. That's the thing.
I know.
The draft, he was never good.
You're right.
Here's one, a guy that quietly is, I think, having a subpar season. Matt Stafford, by the way, overachieving as well, without Calvin Johnson playing great football.
But he's always been good.
I'm going to say Carson Palmer for the underachieving. Listen to the numbers for Carson Palmer. Last season, 4,671 yards, 8.7 yards per attempt, 35 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. Carson Palmer this year, through six games, 1,705 yards, 7.2 yards per attempt, 7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Their passes of more than 20 yards are gone. They were there last year. He does not look as good as he was has in years past, and I think it's a big reason why
how many games? Correct. And now Michael Floyd has been dismissed from that offense. Now made, you know, I think he had a touchdown catch this past week, if I'm not mistaken. But John Brown, how many games did he miss? Didn't he miss a couple
John
games?
John Brown's missed one game.
Only
this
one
year.
Game, okay.
Yeah, just this past week.
He didn't miss early?
No.
Okay.
He's playing six games. Fitz is the leading receiver with 480. Michael Floyd's only got 257 yards on the season. They're not getting anything vertical out of anybody.
No.
They're struggling. And I think maybe it was the confidence, et cetera. It just kind of hurts. It just kind of hasn't been good for him.
Yeah.
Not a good season.
Things change, man. Father Time. Nobody's beat Father Time.
Yes, indeed. Is that all you got for us, Fontana?
That is it. That is today. That's Around the League.
All right, that's Around the League. When we come back, we will hear from Browns Pro Bowl tackle Hall of Famer Joe Thomas.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Tune in to News 5. That's News 5 this Sunday at 5:30 for the 1986 Browns Beyond the Drive special. Relive what made that year and that team so special on and off the field. Hear new interviews from Bernie Kosar, Frank Minifield, Hanford Dixon, Dan Fike, Kevin Mack, and Marty Schottenheimer about everything from the passing of Don Rogers to the making of the cult classic Masters of the Gridiron. Again, that's News 5 this Sunday at 5:30 for 1986 Browns.
What station is that?
The Drive special. News 5!
Okay, that's what I thought you said. I wasn't sure.
News 5!
Come again?
News 5. Let's go to the podium and hear from number 73, Joe Thomas.
First of all, tell us about meeting Shaq.
Shaq, that was cool. I think anybody that grew up playing basketball in the 90s idolized Shaq, so it was pretty neat meeting him and seeing somebody that's bigger than me in person.
Was he a lot of fun? He looks like fun.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy. Yeah, off the court, he's got a really fun, good-natured personality. I mean, I didn't spend that much time with him, but you can pick up on that pretty quickly.
Cool. What did you think of yesterday, last night? I mean, just really the atmosphere was never at a higher pitch in our lifetimes.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, it's hunting season.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I thought he was adding to my comments there. being downtown at the baseball game last night was really cool. I got a chance to go to the World Series game, and it was an electric atmosphere for sure. The fans were pretty juiced up. It was awesome, and it kind of brings me hope that when we turn this thing around here, it's going to be on an even bigger level.
Now, you were shown on the video of the Cavs game. So you weren't at both.
I wasn't at the Cavs game. Maybe that was an impersonator. I didn't see that video.
Hugh came out on Monday and emphatically stated, we are not going to trade Joe Thomas. What's your reaction to that?
Well, it feels good to be loved. I'm hoping that they stick to their word on that. Obviously, I really want to be here, and it's important for me to be part of the turnaround.
Joe, what? Why is that? I mean, I know you've been here for almost a decade, but everything that you've been through professionally and even personally, you know, with this team, I mean, a lot of guys will be looking for the nearest lifeboat. Mm-hmm. Yet you wanna see this through. Why is that? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I'm a goal setter and a guy that's very goal-oriented. And to me, doing the things that you set out to do and that you say you're going to do is important. And so when I first got here, my goal and my mission was kind of always to make the playoffs and to help be part of turning the Browns into a consistent winner and kind of turning the franchise's fortunes around. And we haven't done that yet. And so to me, that means that my mission is not yet complete here. And so I still want to be part of it. And I really respect the coaching staff. I think Jimmy got it right by hiring Hugh and his staff, and I think Sashi and the guys upstairs are doing a great job. So I think all the pieces are here. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
When you said, I hope he's right, Is there a small part of you that knows there's no surprising anymore in the NFL?
Yeah, there's there's no surprises in the NFL. So you always have to be ready and be able to roll with any punches that you're given. But you know, I wouldn't expect to be traded, obviously, but it wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world, because that's the way the NFL goes. We're commodities in this business, and we get traded just like stocks and bonds. So it's just part of what you have to accept when you become an NFL player.
So will the next 6 days be nervous for you? Or?
No, I think I've had the experience of living through it a number of times already, so it's not going to be anything new to me. And it's not anything that I can control, so it's not something that I would worry about. I think my years in the NFL has taught me to control the things that you can control, and don't stress about something that's out of your control, because it'll make you crazy.
Joe, last year at this time, were you at all being kept abreast by Peter Schaefer? I heard this, I heard that. Or was it after the fact that you got everything finished?
Well, I think some of the details kind of maybe came out after the fact. Whether they were true details or not, I'm not sure. But the story that, you know, you get after the fact is usually closest to what the reality is. I think there had been rumors going up to the trade deadline last year that Denver was interested. So I'd heard those same rumors. Now, I didn't know to what level that was true or what level it was just sort of a rumor or not. But like I said, I don't try to focus on it too much, because I got enough things to worry about during the season.
So when you see other guys, though, like, you know, T.J. Ward and these guys that go on and they end up with a Super Bowl ring, and they go and they win, do you not want to have that in your career?
I do, and I want to have it in Cleveland.
these last couple of weeks, you've not been able to practice, or you've at least been held back to rest and rehab and everything. How are you physically, and are you going to be able to practice this week, or are you still going to stay on that same regimen?
I'm doing pretty good. I feel good. Happy to be here. I think I probably won't practice today or tomorrow, because that program has been working. And so until anything changes, that's going to be the program going forward.
What's your sense of how close it did come last to you being traded to Denver?
My sense is that was close. I don't know how serious either side was in really making the deal happen. I heard there were a few picks apart. I guess I'm not sure on the details exactly. Mary Kay could probably fill you better than I could. But it sounded like it was close as far as the offers from both sides. But, you know, sometimes in those situations, I think one team may offer with the thought in the back of their mind that it's not really going to happen. And until they really decide on whatever an agreement is, it's really not close until it's done.
Do you worry that, you know, you only have so many years and snaps left in you physically? I mean, that's just the reality. It's at some point it comes to an end for everyone, no matter who you are. But with where the team is right now and how far it is to get where you want to go, do you worry that you might not even get there in your career? That you know, you might hang them up, and then next year is the year that it breaks through. Is that something you're worried about? Or?
Well, in football, we're not really guaranteed even the next play, because it's such a violent sport that it can be taken away from you at any moment. And I think you kind of accept that early on. So it's hard to ever really know when your career is going to be over. And it's, like I said, it's not something that you can worry about or try to count or plan on, because you really don't know. I mean, you could play like Peyton Manning, one of these guys that plays 18 years, or it could be done tomorrow. So you can't worry about that. In hindsight, I'm sure you'll have a better answer. And you say, I wish I could have done this or that, but when you're living the reality of it, you just don't know when it's going to end.
Joe, he obviously said what he said to us publicly the other day. Did he or anybody else in the organization kind of reach out to you and address it with you?
Not really, because it's something that seems to happen every year. I know that Hughes knew this year, but when you're a good older player on a team that's not winning a lot, your name's naturally going to be tied to trade talks. It happens across the league every year, and this year is no different. Whether there's actually substantive people that are calling and asking about it, and whether the Browns are calling, I have no idea. but all it takes is somebody, a fan or somebody in the media, to connect the dots, and it's an easy story, and that's the NFL.
Hey,
you talked to Josh earlier. Seems like he's getting closer. What kind of boost would that be for you guys?
I think it'd be a huge boost. He's obviously played very well when he's been in there for us the last couple of years, and to be able to have him back would be awesome, since the guys that are healthy right now at quarterback don't have nearly the experience that Josh does.
Would you say that you and Annie are so sort of entrenched in the community? Is that a factor, too, that you're just kind of turning into Mr. Cleveland a little bit?
Well, certainly we feel like we're Clevelanders. We've spent the majority of our adult life here. I mean, a third of our living life, if that's not redundant, was here. So, I mean, just like anybody, just because you weren't born somewhere doesn't mean you don't feel like you are associated with that city. So we've been here a long time, and we feel like we've got some pretty deep roots here, and there's no reason to want to leave.
So huge Indians fan, huge Cavs fan, and all that too?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely like the Cavs and the Indians. They're our favorite pro sports teams. I'd be lying if I said I was a giant baseball or basketball fan, because we just have so many other things going on, including football. But, we definitely are Indians and Cavs fans.
Hey, the record, to change the subject a little, the record is what it is. And people naturally look at schedules, and the Jets have had their struggles, and they say, okay, this is the week the Browns could end the, you know, get their first win. You guys, does that hit you at all? Do you guys think about that at all?
We certainly hope we win this week. That's certainly the plan. I don't know if we really look too much at records, just because the NFL has so much parity that even the Browns at 0-7 have given a lot of teams really good games so far. So you need to be prepared every week to get your best from every team. And you can't really ever look at the records, because it's not like college football when you play a 2-7 team or a 2-5 or whatever. You know you're going to whoop them, because there's just such a disparity in talent and scheme and fundamentals. But in the NFL, it's fairly equal across the board.
That's Browns Pro Bowl tackle Joe Thomas there addressing the media today. Obviously, the team looking to get their first win. We'll hear from Hugh Jackson around 3:30. That'll be live on ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. And I would imagine at that point we'll get some clarity. But it sounds like from all reports, Josh McCown looking very good at practice today and could return to start for the Browns while Cody Kessler remains in the concussion protocol. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up here on CBD. We're going to dip into the mailbag, so use the hashtag AskCBD to get your questions in one last time here. Zagura Wilhelm, Mo Pedman, CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Don't miss the only game day show that takes you on the field before kickoff in the whole Cleveland area. Tune into News 5 Sunday morning at 11 a.m. to join Hanford Dixon, the top dog, Andy Baskin, Matt Wilhelm, and Nathan Zagura at home and on the road. Get an exclusive look inside the building as the team preps for the matchup ahead and get the most up-to-date reports and analysis that only those four gentlemen and News 5 can provide, Matt Wilhelm.
Yep.
They don't call him the best color man in the business for nothing,
Mo,
do they? Absolutely not. By the way, one thing we have not even talked about is that the Golden State Warriors went out and lost by 29 at home to the San Antonio Spurs yesterday. And you just wonder about this chemistry. Klay Thompson, only 11 points. Durant, 27. Curry, 26. Where were the assists? Where was the passing?
What were the shooting percentages of
Durant, 11 of 18, Curry, okay. 9 of 18, but only 3 of 10 from 3. Thompson, 5 of 13, but only 1 of 6 from 3.
And who was the big score? Was it all split up for the Spurs as well?
For the Spurs were just dominant top to bottom. You got 35 from Kawhi Leonard. You got 26 from LaMarcus Aldridge, 20 from Simmons, 11 from Patty Mills, 10 from Manu the Slender, 9 from Tony Parker. They did it all. 25 assists, 13 turnovers for the Spurs, 24 assists, 16 turnovers for the Warriors on the boards, 35 rebounds for the Warriors, 55 for the Spurs. And people are wondering, do they have the beef up front, the Golden State Warriors, to compete? And it was exposed in a big way in this one. No. 26-14 for Aldridge, by the way.
I like that.
Kawhi, 35-5, 3 assists, 5 steals.
Like that.
My word. That is a beatdown. That's a beatdown. Was that a surprise to you?
No. No.
Surprised me. That was their home opener coming off of the way their season ended. You would have thought they'd want to come out, and especially with everybody talking about how good these guys are and, oh, the big
four
now.
Yeah, but it's like you knew it was going to happen. I'm not trying to say their bubbles burst yet, but I believe – I'm slightly surprised that they lost at home, not so much with, you know, Durant and this super team that they've created. But the fact of the matter is I think if anybody's going to beat them that way, it's going to be a Greg Popovich coach basketball team.
And they
he knows them,
them
so well, correct.
But I think they showed the blueprint. I think that this is a team that's going to have a tough time finding enough guys for the basketball. There's only one basketball. And you got guys that love to shoot that basketball.
Yes, you do.
And they're going to have to find a way to make that work. And I don't know if they're going to be able to. I just don't know. I think regular season they're going to get it together and they're going to be just fine. But I think all in all, I don't think that this is a they may very well win it all. You
I know
that much talent,
right.
But I don't think it's that much of a foregone conclusion like some
I know last night was opening night, and the Knicks are still just hearing Derrick Rose's comments after the game about, you know, the triangle offense and how he'd love to be in a pick-and-roll situation almost every time up and down down the court on the offensive end. Does anything about the over-under that we discussed on yesterday's show change after watching the Cavs last night?
No, because I still think they're going to rest LeBron so much.
Okay.
I really do. I think they're going to rest. I think
so. Last night was a lot about the city of Cleveland getting that win, the
and
rings.
Just going out and dominating.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
They could end up winning 82 for all I know, but at the same time, I would be a little
I'm
going to
go
surprised.
Ahead and say they're not going to do that.
Yeah. I agree with that. I would say they're not going to do that, but we will see. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. That would be the way to call if you want to get in here right at the end of the show. But Fontana, let's go in the mailbag. A couple mailbag questions before we wrap it up here today.
Let's do it, guys. Behind Enemy Lines tweets in. He says, apart from Coleman, I've been unimpressed with the rookie wide receivers. Why not cut one loose and pick up a free agent wideout?
I think it's too early to tell. And to be very honest with you, yes, they came in heavy numbers because we drafted four of them. But was your expectation realistically for Jordan Payton, Hollywood Higgins, or Ricardo Lewis to be any more, Nathan, I'll kind of throw this over to you, to be any more than maybe a 30 to 35 target kind of guys with like 20 receptions on the season?
Right. And Lewis, you know, he's the guy that they think has the potential. Higgins is getting adjusted. I think if you were going to do that and bring in a veteran, maybe Jordan Payton is probably the guy that's at the bottom of the rope right now. But Higgins went out there, had two catches. No, they have not blown you away. But again, remember who's playing quarterback. Remember what the offense is that the Browns are running right now. This is a lot of turmoil for this team on the offensive side of the ball.
All right, guys, one more quick one here as I just had it. Where did it go?
Oh, man.
Oh, here it is. Brandon. Okay, so looking at the state of the Browns' defense and the up and down nature of the NCAA quarterbacks, how would you guys feel about Myles Garrett and then Mitch Trubisky in round one with the Browns' two first round picks?
We talked about that in and around the studio in regards to, you know, with Riz and Gerard and I in studio over there at 92.3 The Fan, where we do that pregame show. And it's a scenario that after watching Myles Garrett play – And hearing what Dane Brugler had to say about him on Friday with the Khalil Mack, Javon Kearse combination, as well as Trubisky and what he's doing at the quarterback, that would be a one or two kind of pick for Garrett, and then a 20s pick potentially or a late teens pick for Trubisky.
I love that. I think that you have an opportunity to get Garrett and then get a quarterback with the way that everybody's evaluating
these guys. Just not number
22,
not the 22nd pick. Isn't that been the curse?
That has been the curse. But somewhere in there, and I think Kaiser could be there, Trubisky, whoever they evaluate at that point. But those are guys that are pocket passers that have the physical skills and the size that you want. Trubisky also said it was his dream to be the quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, which I know makes him very high on the gets us category, which is important in a lot of the Cleveland Browns Twitter evaluations of potential players. Where does he get us? Mitch Trubisky gets us. All right, that'll do it for us today. Go Tribe tonight. Make it 2-0. By the way, around 3:30, Hugh Jackson will address the media on clevelandbrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. Probably an update on the quarterbacks, but again, it's looking like Josh McCown has a chance to be your starter on Sunday for the Browns against the Jets. For Matt Fontana, Matt Wilhelm, I'm Mo Pedman, I'm Nathan Zagura, and saying thank you for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850, WKNR Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.